From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour could be made this fall for the first time since 1967 in New York State. We're talking about a constitutional convention. And frankly, it's a little bit like the forthcoming eclipse. If you're interested, get involved now or you won't have another chance for many years. That's because New York voters get the chance to hold a constitutional convention only every 20 years. And the last one happened half a century ago. It was called by the state legislature. The last time New York voters called for a constitutional convention was nearly 80 years ago. What's the point of this? Well, supporters say it gives New York voters the chance to re-examine how our state works, make some improvements or changes. Canisius College professor Peter Gailey says a constitutional convention gives voters a chance to essentially codify the Paris Climate Accords more strictly as we look at regulations on polluting, for example. But many lawmakers oppose a convention, as do some unions who worry that a convention could roll back worker protections in this state. Our guests this hour are going to lay it out for us, the process, what it means, where they stand on the issue. We'd love to hear from you. Do you have questions about a constitutional convention? Do you support it? Do you oppose it? Or do you have no idea what we're talking about? 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. In our second half hour, we will hear from Assemblyman Mark Johns from the 135th Assembly District. But let me welcome in studio Wes Renfro, who is the chair of the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. Wes, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And also here is Neil Jasek, who is chairman of the Government Reform Committee of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. Neil, welcome back to the program to you.
Well, thank you.
Is it going to happen?
It's up to the voters, as everything else is. But we are going to be doing our best to make sure that people understand the issues, and we feel confident if they do, we can get a yes vote this year.
Okay. And Wes, we haven't seen it for many years. Are you a skeptic that voters will say yes, or is this the climate where it could happen?
In general, I'm skeptical that it's going to happen. But if there is a year to put this to the voters in New York State, I think it's this year. The national political scene is pretty tumultuous. I think on the left and right, there are folks who are interested in serious reform and change. The Trump presidency certainly is fueling some of that. And then we just see the, you know, unending scandals out of Albany. And I think there is a cumulative effect of some of that.
All right. And to what Wes brings up, the Trump presidency, and you might think, wait a second, this is a New York State constitutional convention. Why would that relate to the Trump presidency? Well, I mentioned Professor Peter Gailey from Canisius, Wes making the same kind of point here, that states are really looking at federalism, looking at if we are laboratories of democracy, this is a chance to really strengthen some of what states might perceive to be protections against either federal overreach or what they're uncomfortable with at the federal level, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if we look over the past 50 or so years, California has been a state that's done this in a number of ways just because of their size. But in recent years, we're seeing other states in the U.S. really pushing back against the federal government, particularly big states, populous states, wealthy, powerful states like New York. And this is an opportunity for New York State to lead the nation in a number of ways.
Okay.
And if New York State is going to lead the nation, it really needs to clean up its act and turn its dysfunctional legislative system into one that works. And that's why we need a constitutional convention. The requirement that we vote every 20 years to see if we want to have one was put in the Constitution in 1846. And the reason for that was to at least provide some way for the people of the state to express their desire for the change that's needed in government and bypass the power brokers that would otherwise and have continuously run the state in between.
Yeah, if you're wondering how rare that is in this country, according to the New York Public Interest Research Group, 14 other states have similar mechanisms in place to periodically ask voters about convening their own convention. So only 15 out of 50 states get the chance to do this. New York is one of them, and we rarely do it. So what I want to do is work through some of the common questions people have about how it would work and about some of the consequences. And we're going to work in phone calls as we do that. So I'll ask our guests, get your headphones on, because I'm going to take our first phone call, which comes from Corey in Webster, who is, if I'm reading this correctly, Corey, an educator in the city of Rochester?
Yes, Evan, that's correct.
Okay, so you oppose a constitutional convention, yes?
I do.
Okay, tell us why.
Well, the constitutional convention would put the pensions of all New York State employees at risk of being taken away. And as a state employee, You know, I contribute to my pension, and so do all the other state employees, and I don't want to put my pension or others at risk.
All right, so why don't you stay there, Corey, because I want to let our guests work through this. So, Neil, you've already said here on this program you're in favor of a constitutional convention.
Yes, I'm in favor of a constitutional convention. I also have a public pension from New York State, and I'm equally concerned about that. I mean, I'm equally concerned about keeping it, but that's just not going to happen. First of all existing pensions are contracts with the state of New York and are covered by federal contract law. There's no way existing pensions can be broken by the state. The state has already made significant changes in its public pensions, all the way from Tier 1 down to whatever they're now, Tier 5 or 6. So they're quite capable of messing with the pension, even with the way the Constitution is written today. So the idea of fiddling with the pension protection in the Constitution is really a red herring.
But this is a very popular concern. Among the no-vote crowd, this is one of the leading concerns out there, Neil.
Well, it should be a leading concern, but it ought to be real.
Okay. Wes, do you share his skepticism that this is a legitimate concern?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is really fake news. Neil's points about the state being able to reconsider pensions in play is absolutely correct. I've seen this issue come up in the rhetoric of the anti-crowd, and I really do conclude that it's a red herring. I would also point out that it's very, very, very difficult to roll back some of the other types of protections for employees that folks have been discussing. That actually is something that hasn't happened in this country. And so even in the broader context about sort of what will happen to workers and employees, I don't really see the downsides.
Okay, let's ask Corey if that convinces her. Are you feeling any differently?
I'm not. I've got to be honest with you. Based on what I've seen and what I've read, you know, I'm not just as a teacher concerned. I'm concerned about other areas that also have state pensions. You know, public service providers like EMTs, firefighters, they also have pensions. I'm not right. Not familiar with any that their pensions are safe either.
If I were to have to make up my mind on the stuff that you've been reading, which we also get, since my wife is a retired school teacher and we get the same kind of literature in the house, I'd probably feel the same way. But I would ask you to go back to the people that are providing that literature and ask them where they're getting that information from. And really, it's a lot of Chicken Little, the sky is falling stuff.
And to that, I would add that there are, I think, real reasons for some folks to oppose the CONCON. But hanging your hat on the specter of upending state pensions, which are guaranteed, is not, I think, a particularly legitimate grounds for opposition.
All right, Corey, I want to thank you for the phone call. And because, again, what Corey's raising is a very, very common concern.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, according to the New York Times, a lot of money and lobbying being spent here. The campaign filing showing an intense no vote operation out there. One of them called New Yorkers Against Corruption. It's raised $635,000 the last filing. Much of that raised from unions. And teachers' unions, healthcare unions, they are concerned about this issue. So, so Neil, let me flip this a little and ask you, even though you're in favor of a constitutional convention, what's the most legitimate good concern that's out there? Because you don't think that this pension issue is legit. What is a possible bad outcome?
Actually, we're going to get to the question of delegates. And that is really the most real problem, is making sure that the delegates that are elected to the convention are people that are committed to actually make improvements in the Constitution for the people of the state and don't want to make it worse. And we have a lot of controls over that to allow that to happen. The other arguments are it's cost, which is phony. The numbers that are thrown out are overinflated. A constitutional convention will cost less than $100 million in current dollars. And if they do some of the things that they could do, such as clean up the judiciary and court system, that would yield a benefit of about $500 million. So, you know, the cost-benefit is quite significant. Or I should say the potential cost-benefit. And the other ones are, again, fear. There are fear that people will take away the conservation protections, the forever wild protections. I just can't conceive of that happening. But as I said, the real question, which we'll need to focus on next year, is who will be electing to do the convention.
All right. So what Neil is talking about is process there. And a number of questions have already come in. We're going to get there in just a second. But a good follow-up to this is Tristan in Rochester, who I think has a very fair question, because Tristan has been hearing, as I understand it, the same kind of thing. Your union pushing you to vote no. Is that right, Tristan?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a government employee as well. I'm on the state pension program, you know, tier six, so pretty far down. But, you know, the union is really pushing us to vote no on this, and I'm just wondering why. What do they stand to gain by not, you know, having a constitutional convention if it really is a red herring or, you know, a Chicken Little, the sky is falling situation?
That is a great question. Tristan, thanks for the phone call. So, Neil, if you're right... Tristan's got a very good question. Are unions just that badly informed on the issue that they're trying to protect pensions and they're scared of it, or is there another motive that you see?
Frankly, I don't know. I mean, I think you would have to ask the leadership of the unions. You know, you get into these ruts where you do things all the time, you know, without considering whether this is real or not. And, yeah, theoretically, an open convention, which basically can rewrite the Constitution from start to finish, can do a lot of bad things. But on the other hand, the right people can do a lot of good things. And those are the things I think I'd like to talk about as we go on from here. So,
okay.
Yeah, what their other motive is, I don't know. I don't see how it increases their power. I don't see how it does all the other things that union leadership would want done.
Okay, Wes?
So I have 2 points. I think the best way to think about the issue is in terms of the status quo folks versus reformist folks. And for good or bad or indifferent, unions in New York State, and I'm a supporter of unions generally, are well entrenched in the prevailing political system. And so it's possible that they would lose some of their influence if we saw a revised constitution. And so while I don't lead a union, I can't help but believe that that's part of the reason for the opposition. They have a lot of say in Albany, and that might be decreased if we see a different constitutional arrangement.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so Tristan, I think it, from their perspective, unions might fear what they don't know, which could just be some sort of a diminishing of their power in this state. And again, Wes doesn't say that as an opponent of unions, just an observation of what their motivation might be here. But they don't think, because of federal law, they don't think pensions are actually at risk here. So that's what we're hearing from our guests. And Tristan, that was a very good question. And Corey and Tristan, thanks for those phone calls. 844-295-TALK if you want to join the program. Let's do this. Let's talk about the process. And then let's hit with Neil and Wes, think of the possible potential good outcomes. Wes, do you see any other possible bad outcomes per se, or you know, in your mind, sort of the deleterious unintended consequences of reopening our state's constitution?
So there is a real financial cost, although in the grand scheme of New York State's $163 billion budget, even at the highest cost estimates, we're not talking about a huge fraction of state spending, but that is a real concern. I guess I would also point out that the CONCON won't actually adopt the Constitution. That will, in the end, come to the voters in New York State. And I guess that I have enough faith in the voters of New York State that if CONCON takes things off the rails, that they will not approve any constitutional reform, which is what we saw the last time that this happened in 1967-68.
Okay. Let's talk about the process. If this is going to happen, it's going to start with this. New Yorkers vote on whether they want to convene a convention. That happens this November. And if voters choose no, that's it. Process is over. You'll get another chance in 20 years. If voters approve the convention, then the process begins. And New Yorkers have to choose delegates to the convention at the November 2018 election. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so the Constitution says that voters will choose 3 delegates for each of the state's 63 Senate districts, and then vote on 15 statewide for a total of 204 delegates. Wes, what does that process look like if it's done well? What kind of people are going to be representing, you know, and how do you make sure, as Neil says, his concern is, well, who do you put up there? You know, what is that going to look like?
You know, I think that if you look at the folks who framed the 1846 Constitution, they would like for ordinary folks like the people in this room to become delegates. I would point out that there are some structural impediments to that. This business will take place in Albany, and although those folks are compensated and will receive a travel reimbursement, it's difficult to get average folks like you and I with work commitments, family obligations, to be able to pack up and uproot to Albany even a couple days a week for a year, or potentially up to a year.
Okay. Neil?
Well, that's pretty much it. The thing that gives me some hope is that there is a lot of interest in actually carrying out some decent reform in the state. And so if there is a positive vote in November, we will be swinging into action, and we being a lot of other groups around the state that are like-minded, to recruit delegates that we think that we have confidence in, that are not going to deal with all of the scary things that the unions and others have been talking about, and we'll focus on the structural reforms that can be made to the state government.
That's a lot of power in 200 people across the state, right? Don't you think there's going to be a lot of special interest involvement trying to get those delegates out there?
There definitely will be, but there will also be a lot of people power out there trying to convince otherwise. And I find it hard to believe that within each senatorial district, there aren't three well-talented people that know very well what they would want in the way of a responsive government. And, of course, they're not going to go into this blind. There will be background processes by the state in terms of providing position papers, issue papers, so they will be well briefed going into the convention and knowing what the issues are, what the options are, and how we can come out. And I guess as a firm believer in democracy, I have to feel that when unbiased people sit down and actually try to do a good job, they will reason with each other and come to a decent conclusion.
You want to add to that, Wes?
No, I think that's a fair summation. I do think that it's important that folks out there listening understand that it's not the current members of the legislature who would become the delegates. I've seen some folks believing this. I think some of that's a deliberate attempt to mislead. It is possible that you could concurrently be a legislator and a delegate, although I have seen a proposal that would stop that. I don't know if that will come to be, but...
Okay. and just so, again, let's do the whole process again. No, this November, New York State votes on the Constitutional Convention. Again, if the state votes no, it's over for 20 years, unless something radical changes. If you say yes, then again, next November 2018 is the selection of the delegates who will convene that convention, and that will happen in the following spring, 2019, the spring of 2019. So the spring of 2019, and then those delegates, 204 people, can make whatever changes they really want to New York State's Constitution, and their changes that are drafted, then would go back to the voters for final approval. So a lot of sort of, Neil, is that checks and balances for you enough?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the final check. If they really fumble the ball and do a lousy job, the people of the state can just vote it no. I would hope that we don't get to that point because that is a lot of effort going into a failed kind of a
but that's a backstop
system. But that's the backstop, okay. And is actually more of an incentive as to those that are working on it to do a good job.
Wes,
it is worth pointing out that if CONCON comes to pass, the delegates will have a great deal of latitude in setting up the mechanisms for how any potential reforms would be enacted. And so the reason why it failed in 67-68 is that they made it a simple up-down vote on the entire slate. And so in the process, the delegates, once they're seated, will be able to determine if it's done piecemeal or altogether. And I think that's an important distinction that folks should be aware of.
Right. And the 38 one passed because it was done in 9 different parts, and the one in 67 did not. And that's a shame because the proposal in 67 included independent redistricting, having the state bear all Medicaid costs, which would be a $100 million a year bonus to the local governments. It would increase anti-discrimination laws to include sex, age, handicap, and it could allow citizens to sue the state. And it could all recognize public higher education along with a lot of other things. So these things went out the window because they put a poison pill in there and the people rejected it.
It's like a family voting that we're going to Cape Cod for vacation, but every day on vacation we're having Ipecac ice cream. And if that's the case, the kids are going to vote no.
That's right.
And the family says, it's take it or leave it. We're only going on vacation if you agree to the Ipecac ice cream. What Neil's saying is that was the poison pill, in 67, 68, and this time around, there'll be a little more of control on that. That was what you're saying, Wes?
I think it would be likely that they would do it piecemeal and not a simple up-down. I don't know that. It'll be up to the delegates if it comes to pass. Yeah. But
all right. Patrick and Webster wants to continue the discussion on pensions because that's a big one here. Go ahead, Patrick. Are you there, Patrick? Go ahead. Are you there, Patrick? Somewhere, Patrick and Webster wants to talk pensions. Call back, sir. Please do. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. So, Neil, what's your top list here? What's your top three list here? What do you want? If this happens, what's the best thing that can come out of this?
Well, I think the two major issues, or one of the major issues that concern people in the state is corruption. And the parallel part of that is all of the power that's concentrated in the three men in a room. And so there are ways to deal with that in terms of having an independent ethics commission that actually has some enforcement power. There are ways to deal with it in terms of the powers that are delegated to the individual members of the legislature and the leadership within the legislature. So those are two very key issues. We passed a couple of years ago an amendment supposedly to have independent redistricting, which means the way the legislative lines are drawn and trying to put an end to what's called gerrymandering, which was a partial solution, but the one that they created isn't truly independent. It's still at the behest of the legislature, and we can correct that and make it truly independent. So there are many ways that we can deal with the way the state works to make it much more difficult. I forgot campaign finance, which, of course, is a major issue, too. If we can clean up these things so that the probability of having an effective system to corrupt the state is stymied to a great extent, that will reward us considerably.
Okay. Wes, what do you think could come out of it that you see as maybe a positive?
So I'm going to put on my wonky hat for a minute and talk about home rule. Home rule is always contentious, but the status of home rule in the current Constitution is legally ambiguous in a number of ways, and that creates a host of problems for municipalities and the state. And I think that our processes would be much better and much cleaner if we had a better and more clear understanding of what home rule is and what it's not, and that could be rectified in a CONCON.
How do you define home rule now for the voters who just got stultified by your wonkiness?
So a commonly understood definition of home rule is that Albany, for example, can't do things that are specifically designed to punish or amend or target a specific municipality. And in New York State, this is particularly pressing given the concentration of people in downstate, in New York City in particular. But there's all sorts of legal questions that are fundamentally unresolved with our sort of vague notion of home rule. And if we could clean those up, it would just be better for the policy process.
All right, I'm going to get our only break of the hour here, and we're going to bring in Assemblyman Mark Johns, who's on the line with us, and he's going to join us in our second half hour. So let's get that break. If you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org, connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about a constitutional convention. How do you feel about it? What do you know about it? What questions do you have about it? Our guests are helping us understand. Wes Renfro, who is the chair of the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College. Neil Jasek is chairman of the Government Reform Committee of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester. And we'll hear from Assemblyman Johns as well after our only break of the hour. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, from the Pacific Northwest to Honeoy Falls, white nationalists across the country who attended Charlottesville have been outed in their communities. Here in Honeoy Falls, some members and some neighbors who live there say that they're not comfortable with a potential Nazi in their midst. And we're going to talk about outing. We'll talk about how the community rallies in these situations. That's all Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Assemblyman Mark Johns is the Assemblyman from the 135th District and is on the line with us now. Assemblyman, it's always nice to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, Evan, thanks for inviting me on.
Mark, are you in favor of a constitutional convention?
Well, you know, I have really one of the most educated, intelligent districts out there. I have the highest...
They voted for you, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, I'm not doing it to be self-serving.
I'm
just
kidding.
Telling you that... Honestly, the east side of Monroe County, I had 77,000 voters in my district, the highest in the state. It's always one or two in the state. And people come out and vote in my district. As a percentage, as the overall voters, they pay attention. More newspapers are sold in my district than any other. And I don't tell people how to vote. You know, I just don't make it my habit. I mean, I got in beating a guy that had been there quite a long time. But you know what? I've been talking about, and by the way, I've crossed paths with Neil a number of times, and Neil's been out there talking about reform way before this con has ever come up, and I was talking about the same stuff. And people, what, I mean, think about it. Ask your panel, what is the number one issue that people want to see us vote on?
Well, let's see what they say. Wes, what do you think the number one issue would be?
Dysfunction in Albany, most notably corruption and ethics.
Okay, Neil?
Same thing.
Okay, Mark, you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And as a single issue, people want term limits. It's the most popular issue out there. It may not be, in my opinion, the most important, but it is the most popular. And when we let the voters vote on a constitutional amendment for gambling casinos, which got 52% statewide, and in my district and in Monroe County area, it lost. And we put that on the ballot. We even had on the ballot a constitutional amendment to limit how long a judge can be a judge. They put term limits on judges. You don't think that they want to put term limits on potentially corrupt or at least career politicians? And I'll tell you, I mean, I got a number of bills. Obviously, I got a bill for 12-year term limits, but I also got a bill I call the SOLE Act, S-O-L-E. It's legislative equality. And S-O-L-E stands for Single Opportunity to Legislate Equally. It would allow every member, Democrat or Republican, majority or minority member, in either house, to bring one bill up every two-year term. Just one bill up. Let's have a debate, a discussion, and an up or down vote. Let me just, if I could, just give you a few facts that I'm sure that your guests know, but not everybody in the audience might. In the New York State Assembly alone, we author almost twice as many bills as the U.S. House of Representatives. Think about that. And yet, every year, we vote on less than 10% of those bills. I mean, what are you saying? 90% of the bills that we author or write up are worthless? Of the bills that we do pass, the majority of them never come up for a vote in the Senate. So, you know, think about it. If we're just passing one house bills, we're going down there collecting per diems, wasting taxpayers' dollars. We're down there for the first 6 months of the year. If we would start ushering in real reform, legislative equality, we vote for every kind of equality. How about legislative equality? And then at the end of the term, at the end of session, the end of June, any bills, our bills now, that we don't vote on or only vote on in one house, let the public go out. And this is another bill I got, the FDR bill, stands for Fairness and Democratic Reform Act. But it allows the public to get 50,000 signatures statewide and take any of our bills and put them on the ballot for an up or down vote. So those two bills right there would allow people to put up term limits, real campaign finance reform, get rid of gerrymandered districts. I have a bill for a unicameral legislature. We have 213 members now. We could get rid of at least two-thirds of these career politicians, have just 75 senators. That's it. Statewide, and we would save $150 million a year.
All right, so Assemblyman, I want to follow up with a couple of questions, and I do want to point out to the audience, if you missed it, that was a Republican, Mark's a Republican, endorsing reading newspapers as educating the public. So we are not just a monolith in this country in terms of ideology. We've got diversity of thought within parties and backgrounds, and Mark Johns usually demonstrates that when he's on this program. I always appreciate that. Mr. Assemblyman, what you've been talking about, the SOLE Act is something that you're very passionate about, for example. You've talked about it for a number of years now, though. And so what I don't know is if you are saying you think that's possible without a convention, or do you think, are you frustrated enough to say, hey, throw it open to the voters and let them make changes?
Well, I'm actually advocating that we as legislators do our job. I think we could go down in September for 2 days, just pass these two bills, and then people would know, you know what, if the intransigence of the New York State Legislature won't allow these bills to even come up, I mean, we couldn't even bring a bill up to limit, to put a term limit, not overall term limit, but just a term limit on leadership positions. And Sheldon Silver was there for 22 years. Did you not think that was going to be somewhat corrupting? You know, I mean, and then you take a look at the big money coming in. Look at what Bernie Sanders said. The big money comes in and it decides what's coming up for a vote. If 90% of our legislative bills never come up for a vote, why do we even bother authoring them? And when the big money, $200 million a year to influence Albany even more for the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate, I mean, full measure this past Sunday night with Cheryl Atkinson, I happened to catch it. Go on, it's August 13th, and just watch that. And I don't think she's a right or left winger, but she had a guy on there, a conservative Republican from Tennessee, talking about the fact that all they do in Washington is raise money. And if you raise the most money, you become chairman or ranking member on a committee, and you wind up raising money from the people that have legislation in front of that committee. I mean, come on.
All right, so Assemblyman Mark Johnson is on the line with us. Listeners, if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Mark, I'm not going to accuse you of dodging the question, but I do want to now ask you, do you oppose a constitutional convention?
No, I don't oppose one.
Okay. You want to see the lawmakers do the job the way you think they should be doing it, or more effectively.
Evan, people are frustrated. They don't understand why the most popular issues of the day don't even get a chance to have an airing or a vote. I mean, you know what? I vote with the Democrats probably more than any other Republican. I have the most independent voting record of anybody in Albany. But it's not what we vote on that's so... that bothers me. It's what we don't vote on.
Okay. So based on the feedback I'm getting, particularly via email, we've got a flood of email on different issues. What I want to do is this. I want to reframe what we're talking about here, which is a possible New York State Constitutional Convention. And our guests are discussing the ramifications of that. We'll take more of your calls. I want to get to some of the specific issues that could come up here. And again, the process is this. In November, you get a vote as a voter. If the state says no to a constitutional convention, that's it for another 20 years. This comes up every 20 years. If you say yes, then a year from now, November of 2018, the state will elect 204 total delegates to represent the state in essentially opening up the Constitution and enacting, writing some reforms in, rewriting it if you want to, writing all kinds of interesting things if they want to. They would do that the following spring, and then in 2019, November of 2019, voters would have a chance to ratify it or reject it. So that's what's on the table here. Assemblyman Mark Johns on the line with us, Neil Jasek, who is the chairman of the Government Reform Committee of the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester in studio, and Wes Renfro, who's chair of the Department of Political Science at St. John Fisher College in studio. Here are the many issues that our listeners have brought up. Here's an example. Jim writes to the program and says, Evan and guests, can our state constitution be amended to require that any person on the ballot for president, Senate, or Congress be required to release their recent tax returns? Wes?
That's a very specific question.
It's very specific.
And, you know, I would not swear by my answer, but I believe that the answer is yes.
Okay, Neil, what do you think?
I think it would certainly be true for the for Congress and Senate, because those are state officials. Federal officials elected by the state. I don't think it could apply to the president.
Okay. Assemblyman Johns, does that issue matter to you?
It sounds like a good idea. I'm for open government. But you know what? There's a bill down there. Get back to the SOLE Act. The bill doesn't come up for a vote. And somebody, a senator from New York City, I think Hoylman, has the bill, but like all the other bills, they don't come up for a vote.
Okay. Another listener wanted to know if the SAFE Act could come up. Assemblyman Johns, if there's a constitutional convention, should the SAFE Act be reexamined, and do you think it would be?
It's possible. This is New York State, so I kind of doubt it, but, anything's possible. But, you know, the bottom line is that the folks that cobble together a new constitution or a few amendments are going to have to go, the constitution, unless they split it into pieces, will have to go about to the voters in the following year to decide if they're going to vote for it. So if you put too many poison pills in there. I hear the far right is all against the CONCON because they're going to take your gun rights away, and the left wing is saying they're going to take your abortion rights away. Those two things are in the U.S. Constitution or have been adjudicated through the Supreme Court. They're probably not going to get rid of either one of those things.
Well, here's what Blair Horner for NYPIRG writes. He says, the strange bedfellow coalition against the New York State Constitutional Convention includes Planned Parenthood, the United Federation of Teachers, the Rifle and Pistol Association, the Conservative Party, and many environmental organizations. And so they're raising money against it all for those poison pill reasons that Assemblyman Johns just mentioned. Wes, once again, he's talking about those sort of what voters might say is disqualifying or extreme measures, but you're saying it could still be parceled up. It could be done that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be up to the delegates at the Constitutional Convention to decide whether or not it's a straight up or down, or if things are bundled. If we go back to the 37-38 Constitutional Convention, I believe it's something like 55 or 58 specific proposals, which were then grouped into a smaller number. I believe it's something like 8 or 9. And not all of them were adopted. Most were, but several were left out.
Six out of 9.
And so the idea that it'll be an all or nothing, it could be that way, but it doesn't have to be.
Is there a realistic concern about reproductive rights in this state?
I don't think so, given the composition of the New York State electorate.
Okay, Neil?
No, I would agree with that.
Okay, so let me get Bill in Auburn. Guess what he wants to talk about? He wants to talk about pensions. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, good afternoon.
Go ahead, sir.
I've got an issue with the pensions. I'm a retired Teamster. I've been retired out of UPS for 16 years. I've got all kinds of papers saying my pension is guaranteed. Well, we're going to be voting on, probably in October, for us retirees to take a 28% cut in our pensions. Now, this is not just all of New York State. This is going on all across the country. You have a guaranteed pension, and for whatever reason, they can cook the freaking numbers that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I put in 33 years, and now I'm taking a 28% cut. Now they're going to loosen up the hours where I can go back and driving the truck and the craft. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm 71 years old. I am not about to go back out hauling freight all over the countryside. Now, you know, you have the pension guaranteed fund. Well, if our Teamster, we've run out of money in our Teamster pension, the government's going to say you're eligible for the guarantee, right? $1,400 a month, max, because it's never been fully funded, and there's no way they could come up with what the pension was. I mean, like I said, this is, in today's world, it's all any union, any working guy, you think you're golden, or you work, you assume you're good. And golden, you put your time in, the money's there, and now all of a sudden, it's not there. So, you know, the unions have got to get their act together and say no to any kind of language that says that you're allowed to cut pensions. So, like this, ours came up out of the dark. You know, they've been screwing with it for over 2 years now.
So
here we are, you know.
All right, Bill.
I've been retired for 16 years. My wife cannot work because of health issues. So 28%, that's a whole lot of people that are not going to be middle class anymore.
Bill, thank you. And listen, I want to give our guest a chance to respond to your concerns. And I know, Neil, you can hear, and Wes, the emotion in his voice there. He's very concerned about that. So I'll start with Wes.
Yeah, so I just want to say that I'm profoundly sorry, Bill, and I say that as a person whose parents worked till retirement age as United Auto W workers and have subsequently lost their health insurance and are paying an exorbitant amount of money. It was not the deal that they were made. In this specific context, I want to point out that the pension discussion that we're having is really about the employees of New York State, not folks who are engaged in pensions through private
right.
employers.
Right.
And I think that for folks who are opposed to ConCon, they have deliberately sort of allowed people to think that we're talking about all pensions being at risk, when really we're talking about New York State employees.
Okay. Neil, you agree with that?
Yeah, I, absolutely. And I also feel for the situation that he's in. And he's right. It's really up to the unions to get their act together, because what he is undergoing and what people across this country are undergoing has to do with the contracts that are negotiated between unions and management. And that's a private sector question and is not covered by our Constitution.
Before I let the Assemblyman weigh in, let me just follow up with Neil, because Neil has been sort of saying, look, this is one of the biggest red herring issues out there. And here's Chuck and Victor, who writes to the program and says, your guests are saying pensions are guaranteed. What about progress toward a pension? For example, what if I spent 25 years trying to get the 30-year teacher pension? What is my guarantee if the Constitution changes? Neil?
The only guarantee is the contract will be adhered to. And if the contract doesn't let you vest until 30, then that's what's in the contract.
Okay. And I'm going to bring Bill back in a second, but I want to let the Assemblyman weigh in as well here. Mark, how much are you hearing from your constituents about concern about pensions on the issue of a constitutional convention?
Yeah, well, I've been recently at a couple of retiree picnics, and they've asked me to speak on it. And the government unions are all saying to vote no. But I've told them their number one concern for their future pensions is the profligate spending that we're doing in New York State. New York State is 50-something billion in debt, very close to where our debt ceiling is right now. We've done stuff in my 7 years and the governor's 7 years. We've actually limited the increase in spending every year to 2%. But even if the spending is only going up $2 billion a year, and by the way, this is something that a liberal Democrat, the comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, is talking about. Even if our spending is only going up $2 billion a year, we're not bringing in an extra $2 billion a year in sales tax or income tax. So we are doing a lot of backdoor borrowing through authorities and that type of thing. We are building up a sea of debt in this state. And when you get to the point of financial insolvency, they'll put a financial control board on the state, the way they've done in Buffalo, the way they have down in Nassau County, and they can break union contracts and break pensions. Your number one problem is probably not the ConCon, because it's a poison pill. They may put a cap on pensions and say you can't make over $100,000 a year, because every year the newspaper prints all these people that are making $100,000+. Well, those people, given a bad reputation to CSEA and PEF and others, the teachers and the people that are getting an average pension. So maybe they would put a cap on pensions, which probably no one would mind except for, you know, the rich up at the top, and they don't need the big pension. But the reality is, if you keep spending, we're supposed to actually let the voters vote on the debt, the state debt, right? Over 90% of the state debt on the books now was never voted on by the people.
Okay. Wes, did you want to weigh in on some of that there? Go ahead.
Yeah, just two things. I think that it is certainly true that New York State has accrued debt through alternate means, right, through authorities and other mechanisms. I actually don't think that that's good for governance. On the broader issue about a state becoming insolvent and sort of entering a receivership type model, that actually hasn't happened. And although that is possible for cities and municipalities, it is actually not possible for a state like New York. And so I'm a little more skeptical of the idea that in the near future, or even the medium future, that New York State will be under, you know, sort of a control board.
Well, right. But I think what the unions, the government unions, are saying is that Governor Cuomo's father was talking about raiding the pension fund. There's only one pot of gold down there in Albany. It's $180 billion in the New York State Pension Fund. What if they start taking money from that fund to use it to balance the budget? I think that's what the unions would be concerned about, and that has nothing to do with a constitutional convention. They tried to do it back in whenever Mario Cuomo was the governor, and I think that was, what, 80s, early 90s, right?
All right, well, let me try to squeeze in a few more listener questions because we're almost out of the hour here. Kurt writes to the program and says, many of the state this is Kurt's view, many of the state legislatures in this country have been, quote, targeted by very wealthy groups and individuals, resulting in many now being mostly conservatives. How do we prevent that from occurring here? The way we in New York State now focus on taking care of people in our state, even though at times it seems as faulty, could actually disappear. And that's why I do not want to see a constitutional convention. That's from Kurt. So, Neil, what would you say to Kurt?
Well, one of the reasons for that is because of the gerrymandering that goes on in those states and the kind of money that flows into those states to elect people that are in these safe districts.
So a constitutional convention could impact both gerrymandering and public financing?
Yes, exactly. Those are the two major things. I always go back and forth on term limits because my personal position is if you take care of gerrymandering and if you take care of campaign finance, term limits will take care of itself because people will get elected that actually take the job seriously and do it right.
Assemblyman Johns, does that convince you? I ask you because I know you're in favor of term limits, but what Neil is saying is, well, the reason the incumbents win so much is there's money in politics that give them an enormous power, an advantage as incumbents, and the districts are drawn to favor them. And he's saying if you fix those two things, you might not need term limits. What do you think, Mr. Assemblyman?
I think Neil makes a good point, but remember, term limits is not to get rid of me or to get rid of some politician that you actually might like. It's to get rid of the Sheldon Silver so he's not the speaker for 22 years. Ultimate power ultimately corrupts. Sheldon controlled the purse strings and the campaign finances to get everybody elected. And isn't it amazing that they all talked about reform and God knows what, but every January they went in and voted for Shelley to be the leader for the next 2 years. And they stood behind them. I mean, look at all the scandals. We, in the last 20 years, we've had something like 40 members that are either in prison, just getting out of prison, and oh, by the way, some of them are running for city council in New York City after doing their prison term. You know, people say, you know, the joke in New York is they don't tolerate corruption, they demand it. And, you know, this is a problem, and people see it. And they don't want anybody to be in power for too long. And first of all, even if you've been in the state legislature for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, if we pass term limits, that's when the clock starts ticking. And it will cause people, instead of being career politicians, to maybe go out and have a career, be a teacher, government servant, you name it, private sector. And instead of going into the legislature at 28 or 38, they'll go in at 58 or 68 and have a little bit of experience behind them. And I think they may actually be better legislators if they start later in life.
All right, a couple more quick questions here. John wants to know, he's somebody who wants to see unions weakened, and he wants to know, could a revised constitution include a right-to-work provision? Wes?
Yes.
It could. Yeah. Neil?
It could, but I don't think it's likely in this state.
Okay. Assemblyman Johns, could that happen?
Yeah, it could, but it's like Neil says, unlikely in New York State. It's just unlikely in New York State.
All right, a couple of listeners asked about fracking. Could fracking be part of the conversation if there's a constitutional convention? Wes Renfro?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one area where folks on the progressive end of the political spectrum might consider rallying to ConCon. It's given the sort of incoherence of federal policy vis-a-vis the environment, states are now taking it upon themselves to bake these protections in, and one way to do that is in a new constitution.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. In fact, the one of the things that people have pointed out is there is no protection for air and water in our Constitution, and that can easily be included in the general conservation protection parts of the Constitution.
Okay, and Assemblyman Johns, on the environmental side and on the fracking side, on codifying Paris Accords and more, what do you think could happen in a constitutional convention?
I don't know. Are you saying that the environmental groups are pushing for a ConCon because they could get more environmental regulations?
Possibly.
Yeah, it's possible.
Well, Mark, before we let you go, if the next voter you meet who says, hey, this ConCon thing, should we do it? You're not telling them how to vote on that? You're really not? You're saying...
Evan, I really don't tell people how to vote. I think you might even be in my district. I don't tell you how to vote.
And, I am in your district.
And you know what? There's a lot of smart people in the district, and people know what to do. But you know what? We would negate the problem of having to have a constitutional convention if we would just do our jobs. Pass the SOLE Act, pass the referendum bill, and then we can do these bills, these... amendments, one amendment at a time. But if the bills don't even come up, as I said, we author more bills than the U.S. House of Representatives, vote on less than 10% of the bills. I mean, come on. We could do some things to make the people feel better. 100,000 people are leaving upstate and western New York every year. That tells you something.
All right, so I got to let Neil respond 20 seconds here. He's saying they just got to do their jobs. We don't need a constitutional convention if they do their jobs.
Well, yeah, but we want you to be able to do your job in a way that follows certain rules that ensures that you do your job, and that's the function of the Constitution. So, when you're talking about term limits, frankly, I do support term limits on leadership, but those are not, we can clean it up.
All right. And Wes, nothing more worthless in politics than predictions. So what's your prediction? Is this going to pass in November?
You know, I really have no idea, given I think that we're going to have very low voter turnout and that we have some tumult on the national political scene. I'm not willing to make a prediction on this
one. Wow, very interesting. Mark, do you think it's going to pass or not, constitutional convention?
I think if we don't do something before November 7th, I think it's going to squeak it out.
Oh, very interesting. Mr. Assemblyman, you're always generous with your time, and I love having you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for doing a great show. All right, bye, Wes. Bye, Neil.
You get it. That's Mark Johns, New York State Assemblyman. Neil Jastic, nice having you back, sir. Thank you very much.
It was great. Thank you.
And Wes, always learn from you, sir. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Evan.
All right. Had a great week here on the program. John Andrus, engineer. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday. We'll talk to you Monday. Maybe we'll see you.